Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left side of the aisle, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal and endorser of the Red Hen, a restaurant for all those people who are happy to, who believe in freedom and good things, from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist who's already in pajamas from Kensington, Maryland.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate hen and a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California. And we want to mention before we get into the news of the week, including Sarah Sanders' exquisite meal at the Red Hen in Virginia, we want to talk about our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, which not only has our podcast on it that you might be listening to us through right now, but it also has articles that we write each week. And Rebecca, you wrote another Pop Goes the Pop Culture article this week, and it was a doozy.
Well, I mean, I was talking about Beyonce. How do you not make that a doozy? I was talking about the Carters' new video where they did a really fantastically gorgeous video set in the Louvre and what that means for the positioning of hip hop and street fashion in the world of art history. And I also talked about Melania Trump's taste in jackets that she wore on a day that was 80 degrees when you didn't really need a jacket, particularly not that jacket.
Was it taste or lack of taste or lack of common sense?
You know, my take on that is, A, it was 80 degrees, she didn't need a jacket. And there is no situation in which it is appropriate for a First Lady of the United States to wear a jacket that says, I don't really care. That should just never happen. So, you know, I don't know what was going through her head when she put it on, but she was wrong.
And before we get too far into the news, I also want to mention our Facebook page. We're on Facebook, and you can look up the More Perfect Union podcast there. You know, a lot of people email us or go to our website and have thoughts about the podcast, but we'd like to urge people to actually comment on our Facebook page. We post the podcast there every week, and we would love to hear your feedback, what you like about the podcast, what you'd like less of, what you'd like us to do more of, and maybe you'd like less of me. That's fine, too, but just tell us what you think. Believe me, you won't be the first one that said that, and we would love to hear from you there. So this week, due process was not in the mix in the United States of America as young children were being separated or ripped from the hands of their parents, and then the president with the signing of a pen, the sweep of a pen, fixed everything. And now everything's back to hunky-dory, right?
Yeah, sure. is that how we're framing that now? It's all hunky-dory again?
Well, hunky is in West Texas, and dory is someplace in upstate New York.
Yeah,
that's how I understand it.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I've found myself in a Facebook group of Lawyer Moms for America, it's called. I'm not a lawyer. I am a mom, and listening to people who know what they're talking about discuss all the ways in which the executive order Trump signed is inadequate, and the follow up gestures of no longer referring families for prosecution and all of this, it all feels very temporary from what I'm gathering from legal analysis.
And this is the part where I come in and calmly explain why it's even worse than Rebecca thinks. Again, that's our continuing feature here on the More Perfect Union podcast. Because
Rebecca, I am teaming you on everything that's wrong.
Yeah, I am actually seeing something from the Texas Tribune that was reported today. CNN has picked up on this. There actually is a plan for what to do with those parents who are still separated from their children, and it goes like this. This is the Texas Tribune. I'm reading verbatim. Central American men separated from their children and held in a detention facility outside Houston are being told that they can reunite with their kids at the airport if they agree to sign a voluntary deportation order now, according to one migrant at the facility and two immigration attorneys who have spoken to the detainees there. And it goes on, et cetera, about some of the discussions. But essentially, what the administration and the government is doing for the folks who are still separated from their kids is, oh, you can be reunited on the plane when you go back to the country that you're trying to escape from because it was a violent cesspool of crazy.
But that's an unrealistic promise, period, because they don't know where the kids are. We will reunite you with the kid that we have lost track of that is in the hands of a completely different agency if you sign this order, and then they put you on a plane without your kid because they don't know where your kid is.
Well, that's all together. I won't rule that out at all. We have seen, before this all happened, we've seen situations where unauthorized parents of U.S. citizen children have been kicked out of the country and their kids have gone into the adoption system. So, yeah, the idea that the government will actually find the child and get them to you at the airport, it's kind of fancifully ridiculous for those of us who are cynical enough to actually know how Washington works.
I mean, believe nothing from this administration. Believe nothing that anyone who is involved in the administration's immigration policy tells you.
I want to touch on that. Hold on. I want to jump in here.
Go ahead, Kev. Jump in.
Because I think Rebecca brought up a very interesting point and a very important point. You know, we're all horrified by what we saw this last week, and there's 100 different reasons for every individual to be upset with what went down. But my takeaway today from watching some of the morning shows is that the real death this week is, if there was any semblance of truth left in American discourse, it's gone away this week. No one can decide on the absolute facts of this case. I saw on one program today, a senator from, and I'm blanking on his name, I'm sorry, one of the southern states, saying 98% of the people that come into this country for asylum and are released out into the public never return again. 98% of them never show up for their hearings. Then you switch the channel and someone from the other side is saying 99% of them do return for the hearings. Then you go back to the first guy and he says, oh, we know exactly where each child is. I don't know why they're telling you that they don't know where they are. We know exactly where each child is. And then you turn to another channel and they say, yeah, we know where the children are, but we don't know how to get them to their parents and we don't know where their parents are. So,
okay, on the figure of how many immigrants don't return for their court dates, I actually looked this up. I was curious about it. And PolitiFact had covered it. I can provide a link if anybody needs it. And the number is somewhere between 25% and 30% don't show up for their court dates. It's not.
So why
in the
are people
90s.
Out there saying 90 some odd percent don't return?
Because they
I know
are
it,
lying,
they're liars.
Liars.
They're liars.
Yes. And that is my point. That is my point.
Somebody lied, and then everybody hears the person lying and assumes they're telling the truth and spreads the lie around that way.
But this is a freaking U.S. senator.
Right.
It's a U.S. senator who is
being fed memes by his staff, who isn't apparently doing their research and checking fact-checking sites, and they're just operating off of internet memes.
Excuse me. I have to pull up my one of my favorite Godfather quotes now, because Kevin just got upset about a U.S. senator lying. Oh, who's being naive, Kay? Sorry. I just love that line. So
that's awesome. Well done, DJ.
Just for the people that don't know, the line was from Kay Michael's fiance was senators and congressmen, senators and presidents don't have men killed.
It was being naive.
I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry.
And, hey, listen, DJ, anytime I could be compared favorably to Diane Keaton, I'm okay with it.
Well done.
Duly noted.
Well said. What I loved, I shouldn't say what I loved, what I found, so I've been saying this a lot. I honestly believe that the majority of the people who work in Washington are good people, both sides. I honestly believe, and I've said this before, and I know this got cut out of last week, Paul Ryan, and I'm going
to
say this again.
I'm cutting that out.
I'm cutting this out. I'm going to make sure this gets repeated. I'm going to say this every
he's
week
gonna mention,
it gets
and he's going to mention it every week until it actually shows up in an episode.
Until it shows up in a podcast.
Just leave it in, Kevin.
Paul Ryan.
Make your speech about how they're good people, too. Go ahead.
All right. Paul Ryan and I went to college together at the exact same time, and no, I did not hang out with him. I do believe that Paul Ryan loves his children. I do believe that he is a decent human being. I do believe, though, that he makes...
Who's naive now?
No. No. Yeah, I don't believe
that
they're vampires.
That's the episode title here. Who's but naive now?
We have disagreements on how to run the country. And this is where it comes down to. They make choices like if... And this is what's been going on, in my opinion. They are saying to themselves, look, if I do this one bad thing, if I let this one person in, if I let Betsy DeVos take over this one government official, which who really needs Department of Education? It doesn't really do that much. I can get X amount of money and I can continue to do good things. If I let Donald Trump continue to do this, I can get my tax cut, which will continue to let businesses thrive. And I think they kept on feeding this lie until the children crying. And that's when they were like, yeah, this can't continue. And that's where it hurt.
Hang on here. Let's actually talk about Paul Ryan here, because
there was a time when I
respected Paul Ryan. It was when
I never used the word respect.
Fair enough. But you know, what exactly has Paul Ryan gotten for being obsequiously obedient to a man who just this morning said that anyone applying for asylum should be put on a plane and sent back home, quote, with no judges or court cases. Those were his words.
He got his tax cut.
Those are the president's words, not mine.
Let me say this. He got his tax cut that he was dreaming about since he was doing keg stands in college.
You know what? He never did keg stands. Look at him. That is never a guy who's done a keg stand. He is not that cool.
Paul Ryan was essentially sold a bill of goods by the president, and he's pretending that there was an actual purchase behind that. It's just the entire Republican Party has either given up its principles for a mess of porridge, or they really like the fact that their president does hate-ons every Sunday on Twitter or every night when he goes on the campaign trail. And that's just the reality.
Well, actually, it's not the entire Republican Party. It's the entire elected Republican Party. But there are some wonderful conservatives who are standing up to the president. And, of course, we wanted to, at some point today, acknowledge the passing of Charles Krauthammer, who was a hardcore conservative going back to the Reagan years and probably even earlier than that, who spent the last year of his life speaking out against this administration. And, of course, George Will, Jennifer Rubin, Steve Schmidt, and many other Republicans came out this week, denouncing their membership in the Republican Party.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve Schmidt and George Will Steve Schmidt has resigned his membership in the Republican Party. He was a McCain advisor. You know, this is not some small potatoes conservative.
And Michael Steele and many others.
I will say, as someone who has far more time, has spent far more time in the conservative movement than all of you combined, I would actually say that
that's really not hard.
True. This is true. I would say that of that group, probably George Will's column is the one that has the most salience. I hope this is the beginning of the conservative movement recognizing that it too has to choose between the two parties, that it can't simply say the Republican Party is automatically superior to the Democratic Party. If the conservative movement as a whole moves in that direction, says yes, supporting Democrats on this or that occasion or whatever is beneficial for the country, I think that would be a tremendous improvement for the movement itself. It would be much healthier if it did that.
Also, George Will shops at my hardware store. So,
oh, okay.
That.
Well, that's interesting. First of all, I'd like to echo Kevin. It is sad, the passing of Charles Krauthammer. He had been sick for quite a while, and he just undergone surgery.
Pancreatic cancer, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. He had tumor. And he's someone I've read for years, and I have to say I disagreed with for probably even longer than that. Gosh, I've actually read him for decades. But I respected him. He's someone whose opinion I respected. And I can even remember him saying a long time ago when Trump, a year or two ago, when Trump was elected, he said this was going to be a new era in the GOP and it was no longer going to be right. You will see a new era. These were going to be the Trump era of the Republican Party. So shout out to him. You know, it's very sad. And, you know, I think that's something we should think about. But going on, if you have not read the George Will column in the Washington Post, it's worth reading. And there one line that I thought was really, he quotes a man of all for all seasons. And he brings up Paul Ryan. And he says, he goes, a man, it profits a man nothing to give his soul for the whole world. But for whales? Because Ryan traded his political soul for a tax cut? And that's what it's all about. It profits a man nothing to give his soul for the world. But for whales? It's a really good article.
Talking about, I'm going to conflate two things. We were talking about people having heft in this discussion and in the conservative movement who are trying to work for the betterment of mankind as opposed for the betterment of Trump. And also whales, that all comes back to Michael Bloomberg, who has enough money to be a whale, a great white whale, and he has offered to or pledged to donate at least $80 million to Democrats running for the House this year. And he feels that the best way to help this country move forward is to have a check on the president, and that check would be a Democratic House of Representatives. And of course, there's also some rumors about him thinking of running as a Democrat in 2020. Guys, you think that there's anything behind that, and do you think that he could pull it off?
I have to say, of the four of us here, I would be the one most likely to support Mayor Mike as New Yorkers knew him, if he chose to run for president in 2020. There are two problems. One, I'm already committed to Congressman John Delaney, and it would be awkward if I switched to Bloomberg. I wouldn't.
Well, that is what's going to stop Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah,
really.
No, it's not.
Who is this? Who is this John Delaney? I've never heard you talk about him before.
Don't start him down that road. He's talked about him.
Yes, I have
times.
Quite a bit. But you know, on one level, Mike Bloomberg was a fantastic mayor of New York. He built upon the foundation that Giuliani set, and actually helped really sell a lot of Giuliani haters on what needed to be done to make New York a better city. He was great on education reform, and he managed the city.
I was just about to say he screwed up education reform pretty royally.
You and I have agreed to disagree on that for some time, and we'll continue to. If he runs for president, he does need to address the stop and frisk issue. That is something particularly among Democrats that he needs to talk about. But I think he would be an excellent president, but the optics of his presidential candidacy are not necessarily very good. He is a billionaire with a capital B. He still runs Bloomberg News. There are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who would consider him far too elitist for their tastes. And I understand that, and I get that. If he chooses to run, I think he would be a very serious candidate. I don't necessarily think that he would win the nomination, because I don't know if the Democrats are really looking for, or I don't think the Democrats are really looking to run an actual billionaire. But if they're willing to look past that.
They would have if it was Oprah.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I would say, however, that 12 years as mayor of New York City is tremendously valuable political experience, and I think it could be very helpful in general election. Which is to say, I would very much like Michael Bloomberg to run, but there are a lot of Democrats who probably would not like Michael Bloomberg to run, and he needs to take that into consideration before he decides to jump in.
Now, Michael Bloomberg probably has the best pollsters in the business, and he knows to a person how we all feel about his potential candidacy.
This is probably true.
So, you know, if Mike Bloomberg gets in the race, it's because he has information that says that him getting in the race is a good idea.
Well, I hope he's right.
Yeah, I can't see it.
I don't know that he's going to.
I hope that person would be right if he chooses to actually run.
You know, I have nothing for or against Mike Bloomberg, except that I think that his school choice program is ridiculous.
Yeah, we're not going to get someone, a New York, just like DJ say, a New York billionaire who's been around for years. And that's something that maybe DJ hasn't brought up. We need a fresh face, someone like Kristen Gillibrand, if anyone out of New York.
She's not a fresh face. She's been around for like a decade and a half.
15 years is a fresh face. How long has Bloomberg been around? Like 60 years. I mean... Yeah. Right? I mean, seriously, 15 years is nothing in politics.
First of all, Kristen Gillibrand was elected to the Senate in 2008, so
yeah,
I don't know
when. Yeah, she'd been in the House for a while before that, and she'd been in New York politics before that.
Right.
Okay, great, great. The other thing we wanted to talk about, boy, we're all over the place tonight. There was a tidbit in the news today about Senator Mark Warner, and I really liked this line. So, Rebecca, I'm going to throw to you. This is more gossipy than anything else. But
this is more gossipy than anything else. Mark Warner, you got to understand, he is co-chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. This is a guy who's receiving briefings at the highest level. He's got a clearance that Jared Kushner dreams about on his best day. And he was hosting a dinner at his home in Martha's Vineyard, speaking of people who have more money than most of us. And apparently he said to his guests, "If you get me one more glass of wine, I'll tell you stuff only Bob Mueller and I know. If you think you've seen wild stuff so far, buckle up. It's going to be a wild couple of months." Now, I hope he's right. I could use a wild couple of months because right now I'm in the depths of despair. I could use some good Bob Mueller, you know, porn star, financial crime scandal stuff that, you know, that isn't ripping children from the arms of their parents. So I'm very curious what Mark Warner knows that the rest of us don't know.
Well, you know who may be able to satisfy that urge until Bob Mueller comes out with at least the first of his reports? One Tom Arnold.
Oh, God.
Who is making the rounds on cable news this week. Apparently, he is doing a series with Vice, which is a news reporting service, that is going to be looking for hidden or missing Donald Trump tapes that would prove highly embarrassing to the president, according to Tom Arnold, if they were to be released.
These are the Apprentice tapes, yes? This is the cutting room floor of Apprentice tapes where he was supposedly saying the N-word. He was saying all kinds of sexist stuff, and Mark Burnett has always sworn that he's never going to hand those over. Isn't that what Tom Arnold's after?
I think that's part of it. Just to give some backstory on this, first of all, Greg, are you there?
Yeah. Go ahead, say it, Kevin.
So, Greg, you know, this isn't just an anonymous or, you know, a discombobulated person that we're talking about. I happen to know Tom Arnold.
God damn it.
Here we go again.
Do you golf with him? Do you play hockey with him like you do with Will Wheaton?
I've smoked cigars with him. I actually
kind of like hockey.
I produced Tom's last TV series, which, by the way, was one of my last TV series, too.
What was it called, by the way?
You had a TV series?
And I will just tell you that it wasn't in this millennium. So that's how long ago it was.
Hey, George Will goes to my hardware store, guys. Talk about name dropping.
I once saw George Will at a payphone in 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City.
How long ago was that?
35 years ago.
Yeah, my husband saw him at the dry cleaner last year.
Getting back to the Mark Warner quote, I really think the line about get another drink in me was a bit of a joke. And he realized, you know, everybody, it was probably one of those where he dropped the joke, everybody laughed, and then he tried to be a little serious by saying, buckle up, it's going to be interesting in 2 months. The fact that one of Paul Manafort's trials starts in late July is probably one of the many things he's thinking about, because that's when we'll know whether Manafort is really going to fight this all out or whether he's going to say, "Ah, screw it, I'll flip." We'll know that in late July when that trial actually starts, or if Manafort does decide to flip, if it doesn't start.
So I want to get back to this Tom Arnold thing. I brought it up for a reason, actually.
Oh,
DJ.
Yeah.
I brought it up for a reason.
Go ahead.
Just to torture me with your name quoting, and so we wouldn't trip over the names you drop. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Did I drop
that? I brought it up for two reasons. That was one of them. So here's a little backstory on it. You guys may know this, you may not. Hollywood is a unique community. just like I'm sure DC is a unique community.
Color me shocked.
And one of the things that happens in Hollywood, and I've heard a few of these during my time, somehow people get hold of tapes that were never supposed to get out. And they're usually of someone famous saying something really embarrassing. Now, you've all heard the Bill O'Reilly, "We'll do it live, we'll do it live!
We'll do it live!"
That was originally one of those tapes that only people in show business had until it somehow went public. I've heard it of Buddy Rich excoriating
his
band.
I love the Buddy Rich tape.
Oh, you've heard it, okay.
Oh my gosh, it used to be my ringtone.
excoriating his band after, I guess, what he thought was a particularly bad concert or show.
Yeah, and you shave that beard. That was
Christian Bale's, obviously, when he went off on somebody on set, that was, you know, floating around for a while. And the reason that I bring this up is, my understanding is, this is what happened with Tom Arnold. I started to hear about this right before the election, where I was hearing, you know, these little news stories, they weren't being covered by the what we call the mainstream media, that Tom Arnold had or knew of these tapes where Trump was sitting around casually on the set of The Apprentice, using the N-word multiple times, hitting on women, saying horribly sexist things to women, and saying other things that were much, much worse than what we heard on the Access Hollywood tape. Now, a lot of people are saying it doesn't make a difference anymore. He is so inoculated to his own personal foibles that no one cares what came out of his mouth, especially prior to him being elected president. But Arnold believes that, or he says he knows for a fact, that Mark Burnett, the producer of The Apprentice, has these tapes, and he is trying to put pressure on Burnett and on NBC to release them because he believes it's in the public good. I think they exist. I think they're going to come out. And guys, do you think it would make any difference if you heard President Trump saying the N-word? Do you think that would move any votes?
I don't think it would move votes, but I think it would get butts into voting booths. I think it would mobilize Democrats. You know, if we could drop that the week before November, the November elections.
It certainly might hurt him with black voters.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that could get out the Democratic vote would be beneficial, but I don't think it would hurt him in his base. I think his base loves this stuff, frankly. I mean, if they're not upset about, and I've seen multiple people this week online defending the family separation policy. If there are people who are willing to find ways to rationalize that, they don't care if he uses the N-word in the green room. They don't care.
All right. Have you guys seen this South Park parody where one of the characters is obviously Trump, and he says, well, you know, you need to lose the women voters. So he goes out and he just says terrible things about women, and these women start to get up, and then he uses this line. He starts saying, so that's the line, huh? He goes, I've been saying racist things for 6 months, and he goes, but that's the line you decided that's too offensive for me? That's the line? And every time someone comes up and says, wow, this Trump is really bad, I said, that's the line? For the past 2 years, people have been saying, he's been saying these terrible things, but now you've just figured it out? What's wrong with you?
Those who would be convinced by that are the ones who could be pivotal voters in a number of elections. They could end up saving Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. They could end up saving Joe Donnelly in Indiana. They can end up saving Joe. Well, actually, no, they don't exist in West Virginia, so Joe Manchin can't benefit from any of them. But my point is that this really could have an impact on the margins, and there are going to be a bunch of midterm elections that are won on the margins in 2018.
Well, since we're talking about the midterms, is it time for our dun 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 dun?
Yes, it is. It's time for the swing district report, dude. What the hell? Are you lagging? Let me try this again. It's time for the...
I'm not lagging, I'm laughing.
Okay. It's time for the Swing District Report with Kevin Kelton.
With your swingingest Swing District reporter, Kevin Kelton. So I went down as I promised I was going to, and I signed up to work for Katie Hill for Congress in CA-25. And there was an amazing turnout for a June Saturday, and not a cool day either. It was quite a warm day. And yet they packed her small campaign office with volunteers, and we were sent out in pairs to go canvassing. And that's a whole different story. I got to tell you, the people that I met did not give me hope for this country. You know, I'm used to talking with people like you guys. I'm used to talking with people on Open Fire and in other Facebook groups. There are people out there that really do not care what is happening in this world and in our country, or they have no conception of what is happening in this country. And go try to get them to register to vote. But what I wanted to mention this week was the state of the race in CA25, because it is, as we've spoken of before, one of the districts that the Democratic Party has targeted to hopefully turn from red to blue. And I learned this in some of my research this week. My district is represented by a guy named Steve Knight. He's been the representative here since, I think, 2012 or 2014. Steve Knight, of the 238 Republicans who are running for Congress again, Steve Knight is considered the most endangered incumbent in the entire U.S. Congress. And here is why. DJ, have you heard about any of this? I'm just curious.
No, this is not something I've been able to catch over the last week, so go ahead and enlighten us.
Okay, so the way that they determine who is at risk for being swept up in a blue wave, the Cook Political Report compiled a list of what they call 7 risk factors to judge by which an incumbent, you know, how they're faring and how difficult or easy it looks for them to achieve re-election. The metrics include, 1, they sit in a district with a Cook PVI score of R+5 or less Republican. I think that means a district where Trump won by 5 or less points.
Not really. It's the actual, just a quick correction. When they say something is R+5, what they usually mean is that Republicans will do roughly, that the margin for Republicans will be 5 points better than nationwide. So since Trump lost by 2 points, that would mean you would expect a Republican to win by 3 points.
Okay, cool. Okay. So the second one is it sits in a district that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016. Third, the incumbent received 55% of the vote or less in their 2016 election. 4, they voted in favor of the American Health Care Act in the May 4th roll call vote. 5, they voted in favor of the Tax Cuts and Job Act in the December 19th roll call vote. The 6th risk factor is they raised less money than at least one of their Democratic opponents in the first quarter of 2018. And the 7th risk factor is that they have a House Democratic opponent with at least $200,000 of cash on hand as of March 31st. Now, there are many Republicans who hit 4 of those, some who hit 5, a few who hit 6. The only one who hits all 7 of those risk factors is Steve Knight. So
yeah, he's in
he
trouble.
Looks to be in trouble. But I also learned this on during my outing with the Hill for Congress people. Because this district is considered such a vital keep for the Republicans, the Koch brothers have pledged to donate or pour in at least $2 million into this district. So that might even things out a little bit.
That means you are going to see some crazy ass advertising.
And which they,
your TV ads are just about to get wild.
That's what Katie told us on Saturday. She said it's good. They're going to start as soon as early July, and they're going to be pretty mean.
And this is, yeah, and this is the thing about as someone who was in the Republican Party for 25 years, I know of a few Republican consultants and actually know one or two. So I know the kind of ads that they will put up. And it is an open question as to, I mean, granted, when someone throws $2 million into a district, you sit up and take notice. And I'm glad that Ms. Hill is taking notice and taking action. But I am not necessarily certain that the ads, I'm not necessarily certain that the consultants are going to put up ads that will actually move the needle. because if there's one thing I learned is when I was a Republican for 25 years, is that Republican consultants are idiots. So,
well, not all of them. Some of them are lovely people and they're very smart, but they're working on issue campaigns, not electoral campaigns.
But that may very well be. But the ones who work for candidates, I have noticed, for whatever reason, they just, and maybe this is just where I am in Virginia, is that they seem to think, they seem, their thinking has not moved beyond 1992, which is a problem because the rest of us are 2018. Now, this is not to say that Ms. Hill shouldn't be worried. She should be, and she should take action. It sounds like she is, and that's good. But, you know, I want to make sure that Democrats in California who hear that don't go, oh, the Cox, but the Koch brothers put $2 million into it.
Bobby, Cox? The,
yeah,
really?
It should actually be Koch. It should be Koch. Really? I'm sorry. Freudian slip.
Really?
On more than one level.
Feel what, free, what are you, 10?
Feel free.
Oh, my goodness.
Feel free to cut that. Hey, that was the fireball talking. All right, I hit the fireball hard again.
That was awesome. I love it.
But in any event, I want to make sure that Democrats don't hear, oh, the Koch brothers put $2 million into this district. Obviously, we can't win that district. No, don't think that. That's wrong. There's no reason to assume that money is spent wisely. Trust me, as someone who was a former Republican, odds are it's not being spent wisely.
Put in the effort, dinners.
put in the effort, put in the sweat equity, and you can flip that district.
And go local, candidates. Go local. Talk about gridlock. Talk about building a new wing on the library. Talk about jobs and healthcare for the people you are actually hoping to represent. If you don't already represent them, go small. Talk about things that matter in everybody's daily life. Do not talk about the fat guy in the White House.
Yes.
And I just want to finish this segment with a pitch. So if you're out there, not in CA25 or even not in California, but you do want to help create a blue wave, there are many fine organizations that are trying to support House Democrats and Senate Democrats in their pursuit of re-election or of, you know, overturning a Republican incumbent. But, you know, one of them is Katie Hill. So go find her website, Katie Hill for Congress, and make a donation, and you'll be doing a great service.
Or just go to the Swing Left website. They've got lists of different candidates in vulnerable districts, and you can pick. It's like a menu.
Yeah.
Or go to the More Perfect Union website and just make a donation to DJ and his Fireball.
Wait, what? No, that will not help.
Is that a thing?
That won't help, but yeah.
Because I'm drinking a nice California Zinfandel. I'd love a donation.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, we're at least more than half an hour in. We still haven't talked about Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the Red Hen, have we?
Oh, yes. I want to talk about her lovely dinner at the Red Hen.
Which didn't happen.
Which didn't happen. Apparently, there was some wine and cheese served. Yeah.
She got a cheese plate.
So, what do you guys think? I mean, you know, obviously the right is coming down. Oh, look at the liberals. They don't believe in free speech. And what did she ever do to anybody? And then, of course, the flip side is, boy, Republicans really like it when cake bakers are allowed to deny service to people. But they don't like it when restaurateurs are allowed to deny service.
Allow me to provide a little local context before everybody chimes in. Lexington, Virginia, which is the city where Mrs. Sanders chose to have this meal, is actually a very Democratic city that's surrounded by a heavily Republican county and a heavily Republican region. So there was, in fact, the owner had a number of staffers who were rather upset. I think even maybe one or two of them were themselves gay, and so they had really strong things to say about the Trump administration's LGBT agenda or their anti-LGBT agenda. So there is that to consider, the employer relations, everything else. Interestingly enough, the Washington Post also weighed in today. They said that the restaurant actually made a mistake. The phrase that that I thought was interesting was, those who are insisting that we are in a special moment justifying incivility should think for a moment how many Americans might find their own special moment. Now, far be it from me to go after the Washington Post from the left. I don't think I've ever done that in my life until
that's
now.
Odd. That's, yeah, that's an odd
it doesn't
phrase.
Happen. But the fact wow. of the matter is, there are millions of Americans who have chosen their moment of incivility. I would say quite a few of them by voting for Trump in Republican primaries or in the general election, or by the words they use to define or justify whatever he does. So while normally the editor, you know, I would say for a lot of reasons, the editors of the Washington Post just don't get America. And this is another example, because what they don't get is how many Americans have actually chosen their moment of incivility over and over and over and over and over again.
Oh, I thought you were stuck for a moment.
No. So, and the best thing I want to say is that we are all remembering that the First Amendment also included freedom of association. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Freedom of association is a good thing.
So my issue is she is one of the most powerful women in America. She is the mouthpiece of this administration. She's painted herself as a victim. While the same week, there are real victims out there. And the irony cannot be escaped. And yet she feels that we should cry for her, that she was asked to leave from a restaurant while literally children are being taken away from their parents. And she's
like, she didn't ask anybody to cry for her. She just said,
bullshit.
The fact that they asked me to leave is more a statement about them than about me. That's what she said.
Frankly, Kevin, I don't give a damn, okay?
Oh, and who's being naive now, Greg? And,
what? I'm trying to be as nice about that one as possible. I mean, well, that just takes balls. I'm sorry, Rebecca, on this one. I will let you finish. I know I keep cutting you off today. I apologize. That just takes...
Usually I'm cutting you off, so it's fine.
That's cool. That just takes balls of her to, you know, for her to... you know, cry victim against these, while there are real victims in this world. But thank you for your opinion. I guess I should appreciate that you're giving me your opinion on this. Rebecca.
Real debate without the hate.
Exactly. Rebecca, let me hear it from you.
What the timeline looked like is she was seated at her table with other people. They had already been served their appetizers. The staff was treating her as any other patron. And meanwhile, they were calling the owner. They're like, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is here and we are not cool with this. And the owner came down and met with the staff and said, what do you want me to do? And the staff made this request. They took a vote and said, the owner said, do you want me to ask her to leave? And the staff together made the decision, yes, we want you to ask her to leave because of their personal feelings. And the owner was acting on behalf of the people she employed, people who were going to be there tomorrow, whereas Mrs. Sanders was not.
Okay. Well, all I know is I wouldn't want to be the Obamas or the Bidens or anybody or the Clintons or anybody else trying to eat in a restaurant that maybe is in a less hospitable political geographic location for them. Because
no, it's and I'm actually, you know, it's funny because I did write about this on our website this week when we were talking about the social consequences to the Chris Hardwick situation. And when there are not other avenues for justice, when does it become permissible for social justice to step in the fact in absence of legal justice? Maybe sometimes you have to be excluded from polite company. And the other thing I keep thinking is this keeps happening to people in the Trump administration. Kirstjen Nielsen was heckled out of a restaurant. Somebody called Stephen Miller a fascist in a restaurant in D.C. And these were customers, not staff or owners. But a thoughtful person walking into these situations might think to themselves, geez, why does everyone hate my boss so much? And really do some self-examination. But these are not thoughtful people.
As always, we want to thank everybody for listening, especially Doug Payton. We know you're out there. Please follow us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast. And on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast, where you can find Doug Payton explaining to us why we're not a balanced show every week. And share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. I'm kidding. Doug Payton is a friend of the show. He's got a wonderful podcast of his own. It's a conservative podcast. I forget the name. DJ, do you remember the name?
I don't. I've been on it, but I don't.
You were on the podcast.
I was on the podcast, but it was a year ago. I don't remember the name anymore.
I believe it's called Consider This with Doug Payton. Doug, we're trying to give you a plug here, but anyways, we're joking with him. He's a good guy, and he gives us shit every week, and we love him for it. And if you like political debate and would like to join our political debate between shows, we're in a little group on Facebook called Open Fire Politics with lots of other smart, fun, and informed people, and we would love to see you there, too. So, with that in mind, everybody, what's going to be the highlight of your week to come?
I'm going to try to get a reservation at the Red Hen, and then I'm going to see how long it takes me to get kicked out, so...